My name is Owen Flynn and welcome to episode 124 of the Trail Running Ireland podcast, sponsored by New Leaf Online Health Store. In this week's show, we've got a coaching special as we discuss how to train muscular endurance without losing your aerobic base with Rennie Borg from Running Coach Ireland. Everyone, get your running gear on. Let's go. Hey guys, how are yous? And before we get into our special coaching segment with Rene, a super big thank you to our sponsor for November and through to December, New Leaf Online Health Store, owned by Imber Runner and 100 mile UTMB finisher, Mairead O'Keefe. And Mairead and the team at New Leaf have a 10% discount code for all of our podcast listeners. So if you want to stock up on recovery, nutrition for after your next big training run, or want to try any of the top endurance nutrition brands they stock, such as NAC or Tailwind, for your next big race, pop over to newleafonline.ie, use the code FUELUP, F-U-E-L-U-P, lowercase or uppercase, and you'll get 10% off their full range of sports nutrition products and be supporting an Irish business. And in case you're in Cork, in the Cork area or passing by, don't forget that you can pop in person to New Leaf in Kanturk or Charva. Now, one result that caught my eye since our last show was at the IMRA Western Way 30K, where Becky Quinn made it 137 race wins from 271 races. I always love seeing and reading out Becky's stats, something we can all dream of, a higher than 50% win rate. Absolutely incredible, isn't she? Becky won in 2 hours 43 minutes with Sinead Egan and Alice Clancy in second and third, with all three women winning their respective categories. And on the men's side, congrats to David Heronan in first place in 2 hours 23 minutes and Declan Donnellan in second and Jason Mulrooney in third. And again, all three getting top spot in their respective categories, maybe highlighting whether you are a senior, an over 40 or an over 50 trail runner. Train hard on the mountains, and with a bit of talent behind you, you've got a great chance of getting on overall podiums in races across the country. We also had the very popular Run the Line race last weekend, which is a fundraiser for the Dublin Wicklow Mountain Rescue Team. And there was some exciting racing again this year with Niall Davis and Nicola Sorgan taking the wins in the 26K, and in the 13K, Anne O'Donovan took the win in the women's race, and Mark Fitzackery won the men's race. And I must admit, I was delighted when the message came through from Mark that he won the race, as Mark is an athlete I've been coaching for a number of years now, and Mark puts in a lot of hard work week on week, and nice for Mark to get a great reward for all his hard work the last couple of years. Before we call in Rennie for our coaching chat, a big thank you as always to our group of Patreons who support the podcast year after year, month after month. As I said, guys, in the last show, lots of you have been with us for a long, long time now. Thanks a million, guys, for your continued support. And if you are listening and like what we do, do please pop over to Patreon, Trail Running Ireland, and even a small donation, the cost of a gel per month, will help keep us on the airwaves all year long. Okay, let's dial in Rene and talk muscular endurance. Rennie Borg from Running Coach Ireland. Rennie, great to have you on board. And Rennie, we're just coming from the World Cup football draw, where our two great nations will go up against each other, hopefully, if we get through the semi-finals first. But we have the potential of a classic, another Danish-Irish classic, India Viva, all going well for the two of us. Come March, how are you feeling?
Yeah, as I said, conflicted, you know, and come the end of March, you know, there may be no more podcasts on, depending how the result goes. But yeah, we usually spend a lot of time talking about what we the topic at hand, but I think we spent probably most of today's preparation talking about football.
Yeah, well, listen, Rennie, if I could get over that 5-1 thumping you gave us back in 2017, hopefully you'll forgive us when we knock you out of the World Cup.
Ah, look, I'll have to, because my two boys, will be happy either way.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Rennie, we had a great part one of our muscular endurance theme topic there about what, 2 weeks ago now. So we're going to jump into part two on our series on resilience and muscular endurance. Last week, we spoke about and we learned that fatigue isn't just running out of energy. It's our brain protecting our muscles from damage. And today, we're going to go practical. We're going to talk about how do we train this resilience and how can we work on that muscular endurance without losing our aerobic fitness, without losing a day of running, being able to continue our 4, 5, 6 days running per week and not sacrificing, or do we even need to sacrifice, Rennie, a little bit of running to get those muscular endurance sessions, activities in? Over to you, mate.
Yeah, you might have to. But if we go back, like to so to say, resilience is what this all came from. But basically, the muscular endurance, which we say is the most visible part of a person's resilience, is force repeatability under fatigue. Okay, so I mean, obviously, so it, you could think of it as, if you can lift 20 kilos on your back or whatever it is, how many times can you keep doing that? Like how many repeats before things start to break down really badly, so that's essentially what we're trying to build. Just in running, the number of repeats always kind of becomes stupendous to think about, because even if you train with very low weights in a gym, maybe you're doing 20, 30 repeats per set or something like that. But in running, we always, we're talking about 1,000, 6,000, 8,000, 10,000, maybe more steps, depending on the challenge. So we have to build a form of controlled mechanical stress on the body. Eventually, the way that work looks like when it's at its most specific is long descents, where there's all that eccentric loading from the downhill. It's uphill tempo running or strength endurance climbs, where there's a really, there's a higher level of muscular recruitment than on the flat. It could be weighted hiking, as Runner's World had an article like, so this week they were pushing, rucking, as it's called. Of course, back in the day, it was just hiking with a backpack. And hill circuits, we mentioned on the last one, was a very traditional way of doing it, by Arthur Lydiard, which was kind of doing exercises like bounding exercises with slightly longer contact times up a hill. Plyometrics is the more modern way of doing it. And, strides have been there the whole way through as a way to especially kind of keep the neuromuscular part of it sharp, so that's very similar to if you were training with weights, if you were trying to learn how to do, let's say, a clean and snatch, which you might have seen in the Olympics or something like that. That's, you can see that's quite a technical movement. So the first time you do it, you don't want to do it with 100 kilos because you probably hurt yourself. So neuromuscular is when you try and do a movement really fast and relaxed, so you learn to handle that, so each of these different methods teaches your body different ways to tolerate and repeat force production. So they're all parts of the puzzle, but they are the kind of final step of it, not the first step.
It sounds really that, okay, yeah, if we're fearful of, okay, I need to work on my strength, I need to work on my resilience, my muscular endurance, how we're framing it today. That fear of, oh, I need to reduce my running days and go to the gym, it's not necessarily true, because a lot of those points that you mentioned there still very much involve lots of happy running, long descents and eccentric loading, uphill tempo work, hill circuits, even the weighted hiking. We're still getting out and moving. So we can actually integrate our strength and conditioning, our muscular endurance, without losing our aerobic fitness. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, it is fair to say, because it's how you sequence it. And obviously, we said periodization is all about sequencing, but one of the very modern ways of periodizing training is what's called funnel periodization, which is what we use to an extent. We use something called reactive training as well, but they are two different, more modern ways of sequencing, of choosing what sort of training should be the emphasis. And that means the early phase of training, which for a lot of people would be right now, The focus is aerobic, or that means it's based on really easy, gentle endurance, lots of consistency, lots of repeats of running, and then it's skill-based. And then you add the muscular work heavier and heavier as you move towards race specificity. So, for instance, in the general phase, which I mentioned is right now, you have your kind of traditional winter base work, where if you actually look at it from a slightly different angle as well, just while we're on that, when you are running very easy and you're not putting strain on your body, you are actually doing a type of skill work, because you're teaching the body how to run at a really low resistance, a really low impact. That means also there's not a lot of risk, and you, because your body is relaxed, it's not under stress, it's actually able to assimilate the movement better. So this is a form of light neuromuscular work as well, right? So you can have the broad endurance, you can have the strides, and you can start doing what people might call technique work, as in it's where you figure out what is it actually in the way I move that's out of balance. You know, you had a really great example there, Owen, as before we jumped on the call, that, you know, you had been working on a really good strength routine, you know, that's proven, has a lot of success, but it had skipped a step, right? So I think that's a good example of, in the general phase, you would want to identify first what is actually the part of my musculature that's not activating, you know, and that's underdeveloped and that needs attention before I start to put on, you know, 20 kilos, 30 kilos or whatever it is. Because by the time you get close to, you know, what we call related and specific phase, that's when you try and get metabolic and muscular stress together, you know, in much more demanding strength workouts, but also in the hill tempos and the, you know, those descents and combo workouts. So that's really how you do it. Also, we'll see a little bit further down this topic here, you don't actually have to do as much as you think. So because some people think they straight away need kind of an elite runner's routine, you know, because they see them doing maybe strength work nearly every day.
That's what my next question was, Rennie. Yeah, how often do we need to do it? And maybe that's one of the mistakes that I made over the last couple of weeks when I was coming back from an injury. I started to do everything then together. I started to reintroduce volume and mileage, which was going great for a couple of weeks. But then I began very quickly to introduce a new strength and conditioning, a new muscular endurance, two days to my week. And it was all just too much, because the injury that I had was the right quad was overloaded and it got injured as a result of just not enough recovery between hard session days. I should know that by now, but still, you know, we always think for the best with these things until we break. And then my left quad was therefore compensating for the weaker right quad as I was getting back running and increasing my volume and mileage. But then I introduced a strength and conditioning session, which was very glute and quad dominated. So my poor quads, who were just healing, and one was trying to carry the load of the weaker right quad, I introduced a very, very good strength and conditioning muscular endurance session. But that was just adding more stress and more volume and weight to muscles that were trying to cope with a return to running, a new S&C type exercise. And now the left quad is gone, and that's going to require a couple of weeks rest. So I need to balance everything off. So you made a very, very good point there, Rennie, that when we are in that general phase, before we introduce this muscular endurance work, we need to identify with ourselves. And it can be very, very hard to do, can't it? Okay, where do I actually need this muscular endurance work? Is it the quads, or is it maybe the hamstrings, where a lot of runners have very, very weak hamstrings? So before we go and load the quads, we need to strengthen our hamstrings first to create that balance. And then that's back to the question, Rennie, how often do we do it? As you said there, very, very good point. Be careful of watching YouTube videos. We don't need to be doing it in the gym two or three times a week. Maybe once a week, Rennie, is that even enough?
Yeah, so it depends on the load. Okay, so I was saying before, and I think that's what you're alluding to, that it's actually enough to put in those big loads every 7 to 10 days.
Okay.
You know, so you get a really strong stimulus that challenges your muscles, but it's spaced far enough apart that you can totally recover, because the resilience you're looking for develops over months, not weeks, you know. So, but here we are talking about, let's say, those big sessions that uphill athletes are suggesting. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you couldn't do more than 7 to 10. You know, there's a lot of very strong athletes, or athletes who've been doing this for a while, they could probably fit in 2 muscular endurance training sessions per week if they really wanted to. Although a lot of them probably do 1, and then they do quite a lot of hill running that kind of doubles up on the same.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but what's different is what you kind of described there is that that's what we meant by you have to sequence things first, because a lot of us go straight to that work. And what happens is then that any kind of compensation that we already have, and we all have some. So for instance, let's say you describe, you know, front anterior chain, frontal chain dominance, as it's called, a quad dominance in runners often. That means your quads are really strong. It's very, very common thing in most sports today, because I say we all sit a lot, and a lot of the training strength exercises that we had recommended when we grew up were very much about flexion, you know, bicep curls and crunches and pull-ups and all these things, right? You know, scissors and mountain climbers, and they are all exercises that actually feed one part of your system. But it's the other part that you actually need more in running, as we know what is called posterior chain dominance. Like you need to be really strong in your posterior chain, you know, your glutes, your upper back, your calf muscles, your hamstrings. And so that means if you don't know when you start training whether you're actually dominant in the wrong place, you know, cycling actually is another way you could get dominant accidentally with this. If you, because it's also, you know, very quad dominant when you sit on a bike and you push into the pedals. So if you bring that into your new routine that you've lined up, and the routine might be great, you know, might be perfect, just what you really need as your specific muscular endurance training. But you might just strengthen only the pattern that's already too strong, you know, that's already it's borderline imbalancing for you. So that's why, you know, you and I are often reluctant to prescribe strength training to our running athletes, because we kind of do feel that genuinely you should go to someone who can see you work, you know, physically right in front, to see, okay, where are the, what do you call, compensations? You know, kind of, for you spoke to someone there, as you said, Owen, and they could see what was going on. And you say you've seen athletes that had the opposite going on. So when that's the case, it's very hard to say, well, just do this program. Because if you have two people doing, let's say, the strength and conditioning from uphill athlete or from dynamic runner, if they start from opposite ends of the scale, they're going to get opposite results. So in a perfect world, you first figure out where am I in, like, what is the real problem? Like, what's really weak and underdeveloped, and what's really strong and overactive? And that's what you would do, for instance, right now here in the general period. You would get those things back online, and you would calm down your strong muscles. How could you figure out on your own? Well, there's one easy way. If one muscle is always sore constantly, it's either a sign that that's the weak one, or it's the one that's too strong. So after that, you just need to ask, do I think this one is underdeveloped or not? You know, and if you could test it, you know, so test the strength of your quad. If your quad's really strong, but it's sore, it's not weak, it's overworked and it's dominant. I know, for instance, my hamstrings are weak, Owen, because if I go into a bridge and I pull my heel towards my bum, even when I'm not working out a lot, barely doing anything, it just cramps up like crazy. So there's something going on in that hamstring. So, you know, when I made that observation, I decided I have to do something about this, because it could, of course, just, we have to be careful. It's not always just muscular, but we're just trying to give people a general idea of how they can start to assess themselves if you're not able to go to someone who can assess you. But they would be thinking, a lot of people have calf cramps, right? And with calf cramps, you could do exactly this. You know, if they cramp a lot, try and do a one-legged calf raise. And can you actually do it? If you can't do anything like that or barely any reps, you're probably weak in the calf, and that's why you're cramping up. But if it's really strong and cramping, well, okay, that's probably overused, but maybe also think about, could there be other factors? You know, is it related to dehydration in the tissues, or am I not getting enough salt? Whatever it is, you know, you'd always want to just say, is it just the muscular part? But this is how you want to assess yourself. And if it sounds super overwhelming, then I think it would be a great Christmas present, maybe, to get a good recommendation and get into a room with someone who can see you do all these key exercises. and point out, look, this is where you're just not working, my friend.
There's a couple of real gems, Rennie, there in that last 3 or 4 minutes from you. And just to maybe summarize two or three of them that I identified, because again, just for the listeners to make sure that they make a mental note of them. The last one there, you mentioned about, you know, the typical calf injury or calf cramping. And I think most people, when they do have a strain or a damaged muscle, the natural reaction, and I suspect many from a lot of physios maybe as well, and forgive me physios if you're listening and if I'm not being fair to you, but I think we all have the natural tendency to, okay, let's go and do some strength work to fix that strained calf. I want you to do calf raises, or if you're quad is sore, okay, let's do some double leg squats, some single leg squats to get it strong. Where, as you've been talking about there, sometimes if we continue to do calf raises or double leg squats, we will just make an already tired muscle more fatigued, and it might take longer to heal up as opposed to just allowing the muscle to relax. So it's always just to ask that question when we do get an injury, is it because it's overloaded because it's too strong, or is it because it's too weak? And the second one, Rennie, was really, really good, as you said, 7 to 10 days. We don't need to try always to squeeze the strength session in within a 7 day, 1 week scenario. And isn't that really the same for all of our training? It could even be the same for our long run. Sometimes we might struggle to get one long run in if it's in a 7 day, Monday to Sunday period, where it's okay, especially as we get older, especially as we have more responsibilities in life with family or at work, that it might be just the long run is done every 10 days, or the hard session is done every 10 days as well. So a couple of real little important things that I think we can take away from those last couple of minutes, right? Really, really, really useful. In terms of moving on with our muscular endurance topic, if we bring it back to trail running and ultra running on the mountains, are there any race-specific strategies, Rennie, for our trail runners listening, how to incorporate this muscular endurance that is very specific for us, as opposed to an 800-meter track runner or a 1500-meter track runner?
Yeah, they have some similarities, you know, in the principle. But if we take it, so first you have to build the structure that we just talked about, and you do that with, say, the general strength, ideally figuring out first what that means for you, mobility, because of course we could have these muscles that are too tense, so we want to release them. And then you would do stuff like strides and light hill sprints. Okay, so that's very specific still for, what do you call it, for trail running. Light hill sprints, it's a very important distinction from full on, you know, because you don't carry as much tension into it, you know. And if you can control the tension, there's still quite a lot of load. Like if you put on a power meter, you will see quite a high wattage spike, but it's not going to give you that huge risk that especially older athletes I work with seem to have, that the moment they start doing any kind of hill sprints, they start to get hamstring problems. You know, so if light hill sprints is part of the foundation rather than something you build up to, you really have to be serious about making them light, you know. And you tend to keep them kind of 6 to 8 seconds, and you make sure there's full recovery in between. You know, don't go down for 30 seconds then go again, wait the 2 to 5 minutes,
yeah,
you know, and then you go again. But that's basically the starting point. And once you can do that, you just need to create load. So for hill running, it's the heavy hills, you know, so steeper and steeper hills, and you can weight them, you know. And that's getting, as you said last time, it's getting really popular. You know, more, I think 2 or 3 of my clients have bought the weighted vests as well in the last month, you know. So it's the thing to do. But as we said, you know, if you already have issues, let's say with your posture, for instance, or you're really heavy on your feet or otherwise, putting a heavy weight on that is just going to emphasize certain problems. You know, so you do need to make sure that before you load that you have a good platform. And then that's the second step, right? You create a good platform, you load the platform, and then you have to blend it into the real trail running, you know. So it means long descents, back-to-back long runs, long race pace efforts, which obviously, you know, race pace for long ultra is actually slow. But, you know, that means because you have the strength by that time, and you now actually then express the strength in these very tough runs, you know, where for instance, there's long descents that absolutely put huge muscular load on your body. And during that phase, it's actually important to deload the supplementary strength training, unless it's upper body. You know, you can usually get away with keeping that, because otherwise the same thing that you describe will happen, just at a different type in training, that you will be loading the same muscles twice. Like you put them in massive load on your two back-to-back, you know, long runs in the hills, and then your big leg session in the gym on Tuesday. You know, that very likely will go wrong. And then you get to peak, you know, and in peak, it's all about being fresh. So by that stage, you actually return to something very close to what you started with. You're really light and focused on technique and good execution, you know, which is just to get fluidity and muscle function and these sorts of things. Because if you have load in a peak period, there's a huge risk that you carry some of that tiredness into your races.
Yeah, and just when you're mentioning that overload issue, Rennie, it just reminded me of one of the other points that I wanted to say a few moments ago, that if we are doing, say, doing extra cross training to get that extra volume away from the impact of running, or if we're doing cross training when we are injured, just be careful of the bike, because as you mentioned there, the bike really does work the quads. It shortens hip flexors. And as a runner, that isn't always a good thing. We want to make sure our chain is nice and open, where if we are injured or if we want to do supplementary work, maybe, you know, you could go on the bike, but you need to make sure that the torque is very, very, very low and there's lots of light spinning, or pool running or cross training on one of the cross trainer devices as opposed to the bike, or even maybe a rower maybe as well. So a bike isn't always the ideal supplement for our cross training, should we have the need to do it. But everything you're mentioning there, it's so important, and it does present it as, there's enough evidence from what we've seen that this is the fourth performance pillar on top of our VO2 max, our threshold running, our muscular economy. So it is just so important, isn't it? And absolutely, we need to put it at the same level of all those other key things, VO2 max, threshold, and running economy.
Yes, and actually, just before I ask that, if you don't mind, I might just mention, because you mentioned the cycling there, something I'm thinking about doing as our next topic on, because there's a study kind of like fresh off the press, right, 2025, that was in the International Journal of Sports Physical Therapy. And it was looking at injury risk in triathletes versus marathon runners. And it actually came up with four findings that were totally the opposite to what they expected. And one of them was that cycling correlated with more injuries, both in the upper and lower body. But I haven't had, I've only had a chance to read the summary. So we might talk about that in the next one if we have time, unless, you know, because it follows on nicely, I think, to some of the things we're talking about here. But I want to have a really good read, and I want to look at how the study was conducted, you know, to see if there's a reason that these kind of counterintuitive findings are there. But some of them are actually quite interesting, I thought, related to what we're at here. But we'll hold our horses on that one. But yeah, because resilience is, you know, you want to build that season on season and year on year. So it's a process really like endurance, you know, that never ends. And that's why once you have had your racing, you know, we use what we call the transition period, ideally, not as a period where you just go away and rest and forget about training. Although we tend to give 2 weeks for that. We call that the recovery phase, you know, just heal and reset, enjoy your life. Mm-hmm. But the second phase, which can last 2 to 6 weeks, which is called rebuild. So you gradually reintroduce load and movement quality. So it's not enough to do running then, you know, so let's say you've done your big ultra, your big marathon, because you're already depleted. Your body is very muscularly damaged. So if you just add, as we established, running, which is really catabolic, right? So it breaks down protein and muscle tissue. You have to put light strength work, mobility, short strides and drills and stuff into those weeks there from week three, you know, roughly at least two, but maybe 6 weeks ahead, because that tells you, like, if you can do all those things again, that you have gotten your body back to at least where it was before the last training. So that means now you're ready for the next big buildup of stress. And, you know, it's something most of us don't do, because it's hard to be that disciplined with yourself, you know, to treat yourself that well. You know, you're probably 3 weeks from your race. You're like, oh, there's a race there in 2 weeks. Oh, I'd do that.
Yeah.
And because you're doing that, you don't really focus on, because you could actually do that, you know, if you were clever about it, and if you were willing to say, well, I'll put in all these things I just said, you know, the work to confirm that my body is functioning properly and that I rebuild the damaged muscle tissue. But that you are willing to say then, actually, the race that I really want to do is in 3 days. But when I do these sessions, I can clearly see that I'm still quite damaged, that you're willing to say I won't do it because it's counterproductive. You know, so that's absolutely. That's kind of...
And that message is so key, Rennie, isn't it? To choose the right time to do that muscular endurance session or any of our hard sessions, Rennie, isn't it? As I said there a couple of minutes ago, one of the reasons why I got injured there this year was because it wasn't a strength conditioning session that I was trying to do too often, too quickly, too soon. It was interval work and tempo work that maybe, you know, now in my mid-40s with lots of other stressors in life, I can't do a session higher than a Wednesday and another session higher than a Saturday. And I might just need to focus on volume and mileage and one really quality session, certainly for the next couple of months as I get back. And it's the same for that muscular endurance work and that resilience work that we're talking about today, to be patient and to allow the body to heal up and absorb from any hard race or any hard session that we do. And that will keep us consistent. Because as we've said so many times, Rennie, consistency is key.
Yeah, it is. It is key. You know, consistency beats intensity, you know, every time, as we say, because intensity without consistency is not going to stick. But you mentioned you had a client, Owen, who had decided to go away for a while to just focus on strength training after a season. And you could say that is a bit extreme. You don't have to do it that way. But there are some pluses to an approach like that. You obviously detrain a bit in relation to running, and that can be a problem because that's actually one thing in the study I just referenced that straight away I was like, yeah, this is a really good finding because running itself creates a specific mechanical resilience. Because tissues and neuromuscular systems adapt to the exact stress that they're put under, right? Mm-hmm. So that means if you can do a high volume of running, you get more resistant to running. So obviously that means when you take that away completely, you have to be a little bit more careful when you come back because you've detrained your specific mechanical resilience. But sometimes, you know, if you want to go away for a month and just say, look, I really want to focus on changing myself, you know, I want to fix all these old muscular problems I have. The one benefit of that approach is you can be fully focused on that. There's no noise, no conflict in your calendar. And you don't get the temptation to, well, actually the running is feeling pretty good now. You know, I'll just focus on that because that's happened to me many, many times. You know, I've had a great period with regular strength training. The body feels amazing. But as the running then starts to feel amazing, slowly but surely, those other good habits that created that situation, that just kind of dropped by the wayside because the running was what, you know, was what we really wanted all along.
We keep going until we break, Rennie. It happens every time.
It's a lesson in, you know, it's about knowing yourself, right? So if you know that you have these habits that once the thing that you really love comes back, like the running, you tend to just drop everything else. Yeah. Then you have to be ready for that, you know, and you have to say, well, okay, this is a bad habit in myself. I recognize it. So how do I break it? Is the only way to break it to say, like, some Kenyans even apparently used to go away from running for a month every year. You know, they say they went away to just grow fat. You know, you could say maybe because they do such extreme mileage, it's a good idea 1 month a year to do nothing. Yeah. You know, because the body is so depleted after, you know, let's say 11 months of just burning, burning, burning. But maybe that's something that will work for some people. But it's about how you know yourself. Like if you know that you actually work well with, like once you have a routine established and you bring running on top of that routine, you are not the type of person who just lets that go, then this is not relevant for you. You know, so really what I'm saying is you just need to know what are the behaviors that makes you leave good habits by the wayside, you know, once they've done what you think they should be doing. But that said as well, you know, we just mentioned once you get to the specific phase of training, you actually nearly have permission to dose it down quite significantly.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a little carrot there, right? But then you have to be ready to recommit to it after your big races.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's something I've been saying to my guys, Rennie, over the last couple of weeks, that it's okay now on some of our runs as we're in our base period in our training. It's okay now if the legs are a little bit sore, if there are some DOMS there from our strength work, because, you know, we've no important races coming up. But then absolutely, when we get closer to our races, say come early springtime, we'll be backing off to strength work. And in that period, we don't want to have DOMS from strength work. We want maybe some DOMS from some quality speed work or some race-specific work, but we want to make sure that we can give everything to our race-specific work and, of course, race day, and that we're not just in the gym for the sake of it doing S&C work on race week. So, for, you know, there are times of the year when it is okay for our running to be slightly impacted because of this new focus on our muscular endurance, which, yeah, as we said before, in the winter, if we get things right in the winter, if we lay good foundations down now with a little bit of sacrifice, come the springtime and early summer, we'll have great successes come race day.
Yeah, and I have put, just for the listeners of this, because I know it's a lot, I have put together an article, I haven't posted yet, I'll post it later today, that just shows the phases we use and what they could look like. But it's really important that when people read it, that you, if you read, you adapt it to your own needs, okay? So because it shows how you could play 7 days, because I know some people listening do train 7 days a week, you know, so it shows 7 days for all the phases we have, strength work and the type of running work that would work around it, you know, the zones and everything else. But obviously some of them, you know, it's very important to know that if you're training 3 days a week, then obviously you have to take the priority ones from that, you know, and if you train four and five, it's the same. And also you would have to look at, okay, what's the total volume they're kind of assuming there from the first week, you know, just count it up, count up the numbers. And then say, well, that's a bit more than I'm doing, or it's a bit less, you know, and then adjust it. It's you're really I want to give people something to look at it, that in a calendar view, so you can actually see the end product.
Yeah.
And it follows this, these nice phrases, I think, that a lot of people know from Athletics Ireland and other athletics associations as well, you know, that the first phase is you prepare to train, then you train to train, then you train to compete, you know, for the next two phases, and then you compete to succeed, you know, in the peak phase. And then you have that transition period where you recover and you rebuild and you reawaken, you know. So that's the mantra. And that's a good way to think about periodization, actually. It's like putting a bumper sticker on, you know, of a mantra in front of you that, okay, these next 4 weeks, my mantra is I'm preparing to train.
Yeah,
that's all
yeah.
I'm doing.
Do you know what I would add to that, Rennie, as well? Because this topic is quite tricky and complicated, muscular endurance, our strength sessions and so on, I think we can easily get lost, can't we, in all the information, even all the great topics that we've covered as over the last two parts, all the great angles of it. It is, I think, important for the person, for the athlete, to actually just maybe to sit down, turn off the laptop for a little while, turn off their phone for a little while, and just have 20 minutes on their own and maybe just write down what their plan for the week or what their plan for the 10 days is in terms of what running they're going to do, what strength work they're going to do. Because sometimes when there's so much noise coming at us, we never get started because it's all just too confusing. And it does maybe take just 20 minutes when you're having a coffee. Go, hey, from everything that I've learned from the podcast, from that article that I read there, from what my coach says, okay, what do I need to do? Write it down, and then you have it on paper, and then you don't need to think about it anymore, and your mind is free. You know what you need to do. So next time when you come to Monday, you look at your paper or your Excel sheet or your coaching platform, whatever it might be, and say, there's the plan. You know, the noise around it all is gone. And it's something that I did there a couple of weeks ago where I wrote down what I need to do. And then I was able to switch the brain off in terms of that muscular endurance, that strength work. And I'll do it now again, as I just need to rejig it slightly. I'll do it now again, maybe later this afternoon. I'll sit down, everything that we've discussed today, my own research, and I go, hey, these are the exercises that I need to do. It's down on paper. It's done. We move on.
Yeah, well, like I said, I think that's the main benefit of planning, really. You know, it's not, yeah. It was never about, as some people make planning out to be, having a straitjacket that takes people's ability, you know, to respond to training away. Because you hear a lot of experienced athletes like, you know, I just make it up every day, you know, and it works great for me. But it's about taking away the mental load every day of figuring out what to do.
Exactly, you know, exactly. Yeah.
Do you do it once, you know, and then the plan is there. Okay. And now we focus on executing. And part of executing, of course, is to respond when things go off track, you know, of course. But that's much easier to do when you have kind of a roadmap. You know where you're meant to be going. So when you plan your deviation, there's something there to go around, go back to. So yeah, there's a lot in this topic, really. It opens up nearly too many topic zones, and we might have to stop here.
Exactly. No, but anyways, thanks a million for the two-parter there. A fascinating topic, an important topic. And if anybody does want to reach out, Rene, and get in touch with you, there might be just a couple of spots available as maybe some of our current athletes go away for their winter hibernation after their summer racing season or their marathon block. So if anybody does want a little bit of assistance coaching-wise, do reach out on runningcoach.ie, and the fantastic Rene Borg and myself will be there on the Running Coach Ireland platform to give you a hand. Rene, thanks a million for that. Brilliant two topic. Well done.
My pleasure, all. See you on the next one.
Well, there we have it, guys. Hope you enjoyed that chat with Rene, and good luck in your own strength training over the winter period. And wouldn't it be great if we all came out of the winter stronger than ever before ahead of the 2026 racing season? A quick reminder before I go, guys, use that code FUELUP, uppercase or lowercase, for 10% off all of your sports nutrition and supplement needs on Irish store, newleafonline.ie, where mountain runner and proud UTMB finisher Mairead O'Keefe and the team will be more than happy to help you out. Everybody, get your running gear on. Let's go.